When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But you know, I'm a Minnesotan. We're super nice.
You are. contrary to what you say, you are a very nice guy.
Oh, listen to you. Thanks, man. You're listening to Cobras and Fire, a Pantheon podcast. This week, Bacos Plus One is the host of the Damn Good Movie Memories podcast, Brian Davis. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and today my plus one comes to us from the Damn Good Movie Memories. I almost went back to my stupid joke there, Magic Movie Memories. Damn Good Movie Memories, the host, Brian Davis. Thank you for coming on board.
Thank you for inviting me, and fans of Damn Good Movie Memories will know that Baco has been a guest on before, and coming up, probably when this gets released, it's already going to be out. We're going to talk about Mallrats, which is near and dear to your heart because it was filmed in near your hometown.
Yeah, I probably would like the movie either way, but yeah, because it doesn't actually take place in my hometown.
No, it's supposed to take place in New Jersey, but it's filmed, yeah, there.
We should call this like a home and home, like for a sports reference, you know what I mean? You know what that, like, now it's more of a basketball and hockey thing. I don't know if it's much a baseball thing, or it's definitely not a football thing, but you know, it's where basically two teams play each other back to back games, but one in each team's city. So they call it a home and home.
Right.
So that's kind of what we're doing here. This is a pod and pod. I don't know. Something.
I think you just created something.
Yeah. I probably stole it from Pods and Sods. Honestly, I had no idea. Anyway,
well, we steal everything from them. You know, that's okay.
I've heard that.
You motherfucker.
Now, my actual hometown of Owatonna, did you know there was a movie shot there, Angus? Have you ever heard of that movie? I have. George C. Scott's in it. It was shot almost exclusively. Well, I shouldn't say exclusively. All the high school scenes are from my high school. And there's a little bodega place that would sell like hamburgers and candy and pop across the street, and that's where they all hung out. They actually that place got kind of redecorated and fancied up for the movie, and they got to keep all the shit they did. So I do remember that happening when it was happening. It was a year after I graduated from high school, and I'd come home from work at 11 o'clock at night, and they'd be filming the football scenes out on the football field. So. Anyway,
so they got to keep everything a lot, like it's like the Olympics when they build all this Olympic stuff, then it just stays
except for
there.
You want it.
Exactly.
The store wanted it, so yeah. It was also where, you know, all the burnouts would go smoke cigarettes behind the building. So I wonder what they did during that the filming. Well, they shot during the summer time, so there was no school, so it didn't interrupt the burnout activities going on. So,
well, that's unfortunate.
So. Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get into whatever the hell we're going to talk about here today, I did have something I wanted to kind of run by you. I was talking to a friend a couple days ago, and something dawned on me. Now, I assume you've sung karaoke at some point in your life?
You know what? I haven't. So really? This is probably a terrible icebreaker, but let's go with it.
No, or what about bowling?
Oh, of course I've gone bowling, yes.
And what was the third one? Frisbee golf. You played frisbee golf before?
I have, yep.
it dawned on me that these three things have one real big problem in common. Do you want to care to? Would you like to take a guess at what I came up with?
Let's see. Somebody's always off a little bit, probably to the right. I don't know.
You know what? That's not too bad, but I'll just get into it.
Okay.
These activities are all made worse by the people who try to be good at them.
That's great. Yes. Yes.
It's like, and by the way, I don't mean like when I bowl a strike, I enjoy it. And my game is better. You know, I was in bowling league for a couple years when I first moved up here to the Twin Cities. And, you know, but it was about hanging out with my friends and stuff. And there was teams and actually a couple teammates that just, you know, they just sucked the fucking joy out of it with their, like, sipping on Pepsis and... But the karaoke's guys are the fucking worst, man.
Yep.
When they're, like, acting like they're auditioning for American Idol, they're not drinking anything at all. To me, karaoke at its best is when it's bad, and it's just
Absolutely.
A group of people butchering a song or somebody just trying to have fun. But, you know, these bars do these things to get you in there to have alcohol.
That's right.
I was on a dart league with the last year I lived in Owatonna, and there was this one team that we would play occasionally, and they were both, like, these motherfuckers, not only did they not, like, have a couple beers while they played, they were just really intense and competitive, and they were better than most of the teams, but they weren't, I mean, I think we beat them at least a couple times, but these fuckheads brought their own Pepsi. They each came with a can of Pepsi from outside. I'm like, you know, why are you even doing this? But
yeah,
and frisbee golf, man, those motherfuckers. If you call it disc golf, you're pretty much a dickhead. It's fucking frisbee golf. And, you know, if you got like one of those, they're supposed to be like your golf club bag, but it's basically just like an archer sheath with like different discs for different. Like,
yeah.
Now I get like some of them, like this one is to go real far. And this one is when I just want to toss it. Why do you need more than that?
I have one sport I just thought of to add to this list.
Yeah.
And I think softball should be on this list, too.
Yes.
I've been in leagues where the guy that suits up in an actual uniform that shows up to a beer league, that's the asshole that we're just talking about, taking it way too seriously. There was one guy, we used to call him Superstar. He would get in, he'd dig in, he'd have the eye black, and he'd pop the ball up, or he'd swing and miss. Who swings and misses a slow pitch softball? I mean, it's just...
Did he lose his shit?
Like, he would get pissed. He'd throw the bat and everything, and we're like, take the short bus back home because, this is terrible. Yep.
I think that definitely goes on the list. I wasn't even thinking about it, but there's always a couple guys on a team or two, or sometimes a whole team where they're just...
A whole team.
And you know what? If you're good enough at bowling that you might actually make a career out of it professionally... All for it, you know, pool all good. That's not what I'm talking about, and it's not a crime to be good either, but have some fucking fun and don't suck the joy out of it for people that aren't that is invested into it. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Gonna learn how to throw a hook in bowling. I'm just not.
No. And to go back to softball, I've been in co-ed leagues too, and it's even worse because you really have people that just are there just to have fun. And then you always get the guys that just can't take it. But what's ironic is usually the best softball players in the co-ed leagues are the women because they were growing up playing softball, not baseball. And it's a totally different sport. So, that's it. And this brings up kind of tying along the movie angle. Have you ever seen Artie Lang's Beer League?
Not much of it.
That they totally get into the superstar softball players, the guys that are taking it way too seriously.
Is it like dodgeball but with softball?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yes. And that will be an upcoming episode, by the way, Dodgeball.
Right on. That's a good hurt. Isn't that
the
movie where Stiller says, "Nobody makes me bleed my own blood," right?
Bleed my own blood.
Yeah, that's a great line.
It is.
Ben Stiller. I wasn't forgotten. Yeah. But for the bowling angle, now, I mentioned, for the people who are familiar with the show, I'm one of my oldest friends. We talk in text more than anybody knows. He just had a baby last November. Congratulations, Wilson. He was on my bowling league team, and he was one of those pop sippers. And at the end of the season, we got like this just a massive breakdown of like the statistics of our each week game to game. And a couple guys dropped out just out of lack of interest, so we ended up getting Wilson's buddies, and it ended up being like I was the only guy on the team that would get the bucket of beers, and these guys would all just like strap up and get all into this thing, and we did pretty good as a team because of that. But the interesting thing was that like my score on average was 30 pins higher in the third game than it was in the first. Every one of theirs decreased by 10 to 20 or something like that. It's like, you guys are all taking this serious. You're getting all warmed up but your scores don't reflect, it's like you did your best. You basically shot your wad in the first game.
Yep.
But Baca was there to anchor the team in game three, all buzzed up on six Budweisers, just fucking chucking that 14-pound ball as hard as he could.
It's a tortoise in the hare, that's it reminds me. I was doing a job interview, so I was going for this energy an engineering job, which I wasn't qualified for, and it was like a 4-hour interview.
Wow.
And by the end I was toast, and I was like, I don't even care if I get the job at this point. And stupidly, I'd taken another interview after that, and so I went into the other interview so laid back I didn't give a shit, and I aced the second interview because I just relaxed. I didn't take it as seriously. And I don't know if there's lessons to be learned from Baco's bowling score, but I think there are.
I'll tell you this from from the years being in the band, there is a sweet spot where alcohol is a bit of a help with confidence, with being able to like get over a little bit of like anxiety, that kind of stuff. It's a teeter though, it doesn't take, you go too far and then suddenly it's now basically a problem, but you just want to hit that sweet spot. And then, it does help you with just, I'm going to put on a show, I'm going to perform, I'm going to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to get over any pre-show anxiety or the fact that there's nobody on the dance floor right now. You know what I mean? They're not going to come up there if you look, too nervous.
Do you remember that band, Red Dragon Cartel with Jake Ely?
Yeah, absolutely. They're not broke up, are they? Who knows, man? The guy's basically been radio silent since their last record.
The first lead singer, before they went through like 10 of them within a month, he did the go over the edge with the alcohol. It was the first. And there's one, take the edge off. But then he basically pretty much ruined his, I'm going to say career. I think he ended up coming back, but they kicked him out of the band after that because he was so nervous.
He hung in for a little bit.
Yeah.
But there was, like you said, it wasn't long before they went on this cavalcade of, like, I don't know, five singers to finish the tour. And then he came back for the next record. And then I think at that point, when I interviewed Jake, I brought that up. And he talked about, he actually kind of defended the guys. Like, look, we in the day and age of the internet, you're not allowed to have a bad show. He fucking blew it. He got too fucking wasted and couldn't do it. Yeah, it's especially important for singing, I suppose. But I actually found it more of being able to perform guitar was a bigger issue. Yeah. But, that's because I'm not that good of a singer. So it's not that hard to pull off what I do.
I think if you're established, you can get away with it. I was at many Pantera shows where Phil was just incoherent. And he got away with it because he's Phil Anselmo. But if you're doing your first show and you're trying to make a name for yourself,
you're unheard of.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. Somebody that
not a good idea.
Yeah. Plus, he was doing a lot of Aussie stuff, which wasn't really in his range. And not that Ozzy's the greatest singer in the world, but it's not easy to just, sing his stuff. Ask Dio. I think when Dio sings Aussie shit, it sounds like crap.
It does. He has his own range, and if Ozzy were to try to sing like Dio, forget it. Wouldn't work.
Absolutely. There's no comparison between them two as a singer, but
no, not at all.
Yeah. you know, I wanted to hit you up with something, some ideas for your show to maybe, like, I don't know, broaden the brand, grow it a little bit. You know, look, you know, I like your show, and, you know, I'm a fan. I listen to it. I love the way you break it down, all that good stuff. But let's face it, it's a bit PG-13, you know.
You know, it definitely is.
Your delivery is very milquetoast. And by the way, it's the best milquetoast. But, you know, it's just, it doesn't have that edge. So have you thought about doing, like, a secondary kind of version of your show? Like, almost like this is, like, we're still doing the Damn Good Movie Memories. But now we're going to do a second one that for people who are into porn.
I just
long silence.
The problem would be the research, I think, because how
many seems like a bonus to me.
Well, it could be, but I mean, how many? You know, this person. You know, there's not going to be. So here's the key to my. I don't know if people know this, but the movies I choose, I own in the DVD collection. So I would have to start buying porn again and adding it to my collection. And that might be tough. Plus, there's not a lot of bonus footage to find out all those great facts about, you know, certain actors and actresses and things. So I'll take it into consideration. How about that? And I'll use a common term. I'll circle back. How about that?
Well, let's kind of like throw this in a Shark Tank situation. I'm going to go ahead and try to make a pitch. I'm going to try to sell you on this concept. All right.
All right.
I was sleeping through the beginning of this presentation because I thought you had no sales.
I hope you're rested.
I'm awake now.
All right. So basically, all right, think about it. It's just you use the same format that you normally do, right? You get a movie that you love.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
When you watch many times.
Yeah, it's going to be number 5, 6, 7, yeah, whatever, yeah.
one that you've enjoyed many times over the years of growing up.
Why don't you burn those?
And then you kind of narrate, you know, kind of like almost a wiki read breakdown of the script, the plot, how things develop.
And the audio clips are going to be golden.
Exactly. Yeah, that you drop in the audio clips like you do.
Yeah.
And then you reach out to somebody like myself, who's also a fan of the same movie.
Yeah.
And then we talk about, like, the favorite spots we jerk off to.
mean, you're an honest guy, man.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I could probably get, so it's impossible to get people that were involved in the regular movies I'm doing. I could probably get the porn stars that were involved in these.
Another bonus. Yes, they're much more gettable.
Much more gettable. They'll probably take it serious. It's like in the AVN Awards where they act like they're winning an Oscar and everything, and they've just taken, you know, 3 dicks at that point. So that, or, you know, for that. So that, and that could be a guy or girl. We don't know. So that's,
And I would steer towards the 70s and 80s stuff because that's when you had kind of the classic stuff with,
that you had a story.
Well, right. Yeah. All the little names with puns and things of that nature. You know, by the 90s, it was like, you know, the early 90s, you had, like, you know, basically Teenage Butt Sluts Go Nuts 5, you know, Big Bazongas 28. And then by the time you get to, like, the 2000s and the internet kind of took over, now it's just like stepdad fucks teenage daughter. And it's a 10-minute video, you know. So you really got to go back to when they were really putting in the work. You know what I mean? You know, like you know what? You could go dark web with this and do like a third spinoff that features only the movies Tracy Lords did. You know,
so. That's true. And then I could do my podcast from prison because that would be great.
Well, that's why you got to go dark web and you got to have like, you know, some kind of.
I've seen Mr. Robot. I'm going to get caught. I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was. You know, a tease for later in the episode. He was great in that Queen biopic.
He was. He really was. Who knew?
That'll be a fun discussion. Anyway, so I'll tell you what. I will record kind of like a test episode. You know what? I'm going to do Debbie Does Dallas. It's basically the Gone with the Wind of porn. So
you would consider that over Deep Throat? Because I think Deep Throat, money-wise, is the ultimate.
I'll do Deep Throat. Yeah. Yes. So then what would Debbie Does Dallas be like?
Casablanca,
yes. Okay. One is going to be a winner. And I'll put it together and I'll just package it and I'll send it to you just as a proof of concept kind of thing.
Best pitch ever.
your brother, your sister, and your mama too. We're about to go down, and you know just what to do. Wave your hands in the air like you don't care. Glide by the people as they start to look and stare. Do your dance, do your dance, do your dance quick, oh mama. Come on, baby, tell me what the word, oh word up. Everybody say, when you hear the call, you got to get it on the way. What up? It's a call.
Let's get into the car stereo thing a little bit. When I was in high school, I loved fucking ripping out the stereo, buying a new one, buying a friend's one, you know, getting the EQ, screwing it under the thing, putting my own speakers in, and then the speaker goes out, ripping the door panel apart, trying to figure out why. I enjoyed the fuck out of all that. But, you know, it was basically like, you know, there was at least 20% of the time it seemed like it wasn't functioning properly. You couldn't listen to Van Halen half the time when I was driving, you know, because, you know, one speaker was gone. But I enjoyed it a lot. And I built up and I spent more and more money and all that stuff. I'm past that. I first of all, the stock radios that cars come with now are much better than they used to be. Back then, they were basically shit. It was like having a clock radio quality in your car. But now I don't want anything aftermarket in my vehicle at all. I want it the way it is. I want everything to work. I don't want to tear shit apart. All I can say.
I should own stock in Alpine because I was always getting a new Alpine CD changer after every new car.
I was a Kenwood guy.
There you go. I like Kenwood too. So yeah, one of the two, it was going to end up my guy. And I had the anti-shock CD Discman that you could use as the hack. There was a Cobra hack and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess you made a good point there. I did put a CD player in my 96 Neon, the very first brand new car I ever bought. Fucker skipped all the goddamn time.
Oh, yeah.
And my next car came with a CD player, and that one was actually one of the best CD players I ever had. Where you are talking cassettes, I mean, it was like the auto reverse and the song search where it would find the next song as long as there was a dead space. But
as long as there was dead space, yeah.
Yeah, good times.
I don't miss tape players though. I understand the whole, and we kind of talked about this on the episode we did for In Utero.
Yeah.
I don't get the nostalgia of cassettes except for
at all.
The look of
it's so stupid.
It is. I get vinyl. Vinyl makes total sense. It sounds good. It's fun to collect. It is expensive, but I get it. But tapes, it just, the audio is not there. I don't know why you would just want to collect it just to look at it. And it makes zero sense to me. But hey, if people want to buy physical still, then more power to them.
Yeah, I guess. It's so inconvenient and it doesn't sound good. Even if you invest in something that's supposed to, it's still not going to hit that CD or vinyl sound if you're going to spend that kind of money anyway. CD you can get to sound good for the cheapest, but vinyl it doesn't. If you take care of it, it'll last. You can't say that about cassette.
Forever.
I mean, cassettes go bad when you play them. They go bad when you don't play them.
That's right. And the best part about cassettes were taping. And now you can do that with burning if you really want to do it. Shit, just use your playlist. So
Or a thumb drive. That's my go-to nowadays.
There you go. Absolutely.
Man, I would have loved to have had a fucking thumb drive in my music collection in my car when I was a kid.
Oh, it would have been. Yeah, I know. Now get off my lawn. But yeah, kids don't realize how spoiled they are when it comes to music now because it's not valued. Music isn't valued anymore because it doesn't have to be.
It's something that we talk about a lot now. I'll switch into a news story here because it's a good segue with that. Mm-hmm. I've always, you know, first my personal domino theory is basically sometime around the iPod is when music became less important because the iPod was all about the product. Who gives a fuck what you're listening to as long as you got an iPod? And that kind of spiraled into like, you know, American Idol. And I'm not necessarily in chronological order here, but I will say American Idol because Nikki Sixx just announced today. He's bragging that he's going to be on American Idol this Sunday. A show that's basically tired past its point anyway. Nobody gives a fuck like they did at one point, but really only two people had a career off of American Idol. And yet we're still kind of, you know, kind of clamoring toward this. But American Idol basically devalued music. It was like, well, I just want this person to sing this song and then be thrown in the trash because I don't care. I have to admit, I know Kiss has been on there. He's not the first one, but I just think, you know what? It's an obvious problem. You don't have to fucking endorse it. You only do it because you have no fucking integrity and you're a fucking sellout. That's it to me. I mean, especially if you're at the level where you have enough money that you can sell tickets to robots. You know what I mean? What are your thoughts on the whole American Idol, these song contest things? I know we talk about a lot on our show, but, you know, you're a guy who I've never really picked the brain on this.
No, it's completely it totally has devalued music. It's the get rich quick. There are so many other people just singing in bars that you'd never heard of that are a million times better than these people that happen to just get lucky and get noticed on these shows. It really cheapens music. Just like I think today, I don't think music is valued just because I don't think you should necessarily be able to own everything. Like that's just, people are spoiled by everything's free. Like, oh, I got to discover this new music because it's free on the internet. Well, that's nice. But back in the day, it's like you had to pick and choose what you really wanted to hear and because you had to pay for it. And I think that's good. I think too much of something is bad. I mean, look at television today. There are too many TV stations, too many shows. There's not, you can't possibly watch them all, which means everything gets diluted. So there's times when, and we'll steer this to movies. I would watch a movie because we only had five stations, you know, growing up before cable. So I would take the time to watch Crossroads with Ralph Macchio because it was on and because nothing else was on. It's not a great movie, but I discovered blues music because of it. And today I would never watch Crossroads probably because it's just, there's so many other things to watch. And so I think there's too much availability. There's too many options for people and sometimes less is more. And to kind of go back where you're saying about American Idol, there's too many of these shows and there's too many of these people that think they can kind of make it big without really putting in the work. And they're getting rewarded for basically going the lazy way and just winning the lottery.
Yeah. And a couple of things to touch on there. The last comment, I remember, I always call her the church mouse that won America's Got Talent, but in England, Susan Boyle.
Okay.
And everybody was, and really it was kind of, I can't believe that it wasn't more obviously insulting to people the way they reacted. It's like, can you believe the voice on her? Cause what they're really saying is, my God, that fat butt ugly bitch.
Yep.
You would never expect somebody that gross and that poorly dressed to have like the two things have anything to do with each other. Like like a God-given talent of the voice you have has anything to do with your taste in clothes and how pretty you are. And that's really kind of where our mindset is. But to back that up, she released her record and it was called like To Dream and Dream or something like that. Like this was, there was some comment where she was like, "This, I'm living the dream I always had," and I'm like, "I know what you're trying to say, lady," and I don't want to be mean, but you dreamed like, "Oh God, I really hope one day I get to be a contestant on a show called I Have Talent and I Win." Yeah. It's like, that's a really fucking pathetic dream. You know what I mean? It's to me, that's less. It would be less pathetic to say, I really want to win Wheel of Fortune.
Right. Or you're this brilliant person that knows all these things and you've been holding off your life just so you can get on Jeopardy. So you're doing all these, you could have a great career being an engineer, but no, I'm going to wait to that Jeopardy moment where I can really make it big. Come on. You know? Yeah. It's a similar thing. We're on par, man. We're on par.
Dolphins, like dolphins.
of these Netflix and Amazon movies that are being produced now, they're the equivalent, the new ones, of what you and I grew up with in the 80s and 90s of straight to video movies. And these kids are thinking that, oh, all these great new movies are coming out, and like Red Notice, you got to see Red Notice. And I'm like, why? This is basically American Pie unsanctioned in the 90s that was going straight to video. Again, it's killing quality-wise these movies, and people often get upset. It's like, why don't you care about new movies? And I'm like, because there's 100 years of other movies I haven't seen yet. They're usually in better quality, and I'm discovering old movies that are new to me. So I don't have to necessarily waste my time watching something that's brand new simply because it's new. I don't need to chase that dragon. I get that a lot from music, like, oh, you only listen to old music. Well, I'm listening to old music that's new to me, because there's 80 years of music out there. It doesn't make me not want to listen to brand new bands, but there's other bands that are old that are new to me. So I think if people spun it that way, they wouldn't have that get off my lawn type of thing. But if I can see one or two new movies that are really good, I'm happy. But if I don't, that's fine. There's so much other stuff I've never seen before that came out in the past that is worth checking out. And that's why I like to do that in my podcast, because not every movie I talk about is great, but it's going to be probably entertaining. And I don't necessarily need to talk about something brand new just because it's new. And, I'm not trying to kill the movie business now, but they're not doing themselves any favors, I think, with these Amazon and Netflix movies.
Have you seen Llamageddon?
That I definitely need to check out.
It's a new movie.
But this is another little tangent, but you have movies are way too long now. There's no reason for a Batman movie or a comedy to push 2.5 to 3 hours.
Agreed.
And I don't know why.
90 to 100 minutes
is the sweet spot. It's kind of like an album. An album is perfect. 8 to 10 songs, 35 minutes, 45 minutes, perfect. But if they're marketing the Batman, I guess they're marketing it to adults too, but also the kid. I mean, we have this short attention span culture that they can barely watch a TikTok video that's longer than 60 seconds, but you're going to release a 3-hour Batman movie. I don't get it. Like I comedies should be no longer than 90 minutes. And I think drama and action movies, anywhere from hour 45 to 2 hours,
yeah,
is probably good. Everything after that, you need a good film editor. Not everything you're doing needs to be filmed. If you're worried about certain backstory not making the cut, well, then save it for your sequel. Like, make a concise film and stop just putting out everything because you can. Because I don't know who they're marketing. You have this short attention span crew, but then you have movies that are longer than ever. It's just this weird dichotomy that I don't understand. And then to contradict myself, because I'm willing to do it. When I hear a 3-hour Batman movie, I'm like, fuck no, I don't want to. I'll see it eventually, but no. But then I hear like there's a new series out, the new Jack Reacher series, and it's 8 episodes. So it's basically 8 hours. No problem. I'll power through that one because it's no problem. So this weird mindset that mentally,
there's something
like,
there where it's like, yeah, because you can get through it and then just do another one and you feel like you can stop and come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless
and there's a cliffhanger. I think the cliffhanger vibe is what gets you, because after every episode, they tease you a little bit more. Whereas in a movie, there's more of a pace, or there's a flow. Yeah. You can't really stop. So
there's a lot to unpack in what you said. So I took sure notes this time to get into it. A couple movie trends that piss me off. The superhero movies in general, they started this thing where they would throw some stupid thing at the end of the credits that, oh, did you see the end credits? And it's just like, no, I left the movie theater like a normal fucking human being. I didn't. And now they're actually putting things that are plot lines into the fucking this stupid little, like, we call it an Easter egg on our show. Like, for anybody
it's
listening that doesn't listen to our show, or if you never made it through that last song, every episode has a 5 to 20 second snippet of something that we didn't use in the show. There'll be one on this episode, I guarantee it. And it's not key. It's not going to change any of the information that you heard or anything. Whatever, can we even call it information? I don't know. That drives me up a wall. And like all these Disney Plus shows, that like The Mandalorian and the WandaVision deal. First of all, it's a 30-minute show or a 45-minute show. Why do I need 9 minutes of credits? And how come you are the only fucking streaming services that hasn't figured out the skip to next episode feature should be right there?
There you go.
And then the last bitch I have about what's going on is that, like, with these blockbuster-type movies, because some of them are for me, some of them aren't. It doesn't matter. This is just, like, those movies that are just going to get a lot of, you know, publicity regardless. Superhero, Star Wars, whatever. When we have commercials that say, tune in to American Idol on Tuesday and watch the new Star Wars trailer, or whatever it is, right? It's like, you're literally advertising for advertisements at that point.
Advertising, yeah.
It's like, it's just like, oh my God. It's like, and like, don't get me wrong, I kind of want to see the new Star Wars trailer when it comes out,
sure,
whatever it is, but yeah. I was like, do we really need to, and when you, it's worse when you go on YouTube to watch it and you have to sit through a commercial to watch what's basically a fucking commercial.
Yeah, everyone's whoring each person out, like these conglomerates are, but regarding the after credits stuff, it used to be fun because you didn't expect it. Now you expect it. Like in Ferris Bueller, that was fun. It was new. It's not the first time it happened, but that was cool.
Netflix to me has done a lot of really good stuff. I'd really have to pull it up, but you know, like there are some decent stuff. For me, more on the series than the movies, I think.
Definitely the series. Yeah.
Although we were fortunate to have Netflix at work, so I get to watch 20 to 30, depending on how long I'm actually in the lunchroom, 20 to 30 minutes of a movie or TV show at a time. And I sat my way through that dreadful Rock and Ryan Reynolds movie that just came out.
Red Notice. Yeah.
Oh, that's one thing about Netflix that to me is consistent. Forgettable titles. What was that thing called? I don't remember. Like, we literally just finished a show last night about that had Toni Collette in it. It's like, is it about her or her story or something like that? And by the way, way too fucking bloated. It was just one fucking flashback after another. It was always going back, and it's like, God, I don't need that much, man. Wrap it up. You know, Pam and Tommy. Pam and Tommy, whole episode 2 is pointless. You can do it in 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, definitely. But that's a mini series. But yeah, don't get me wrong. I think the golden age of script writers are all in television now, or all doing series. I think they've left Hollywood film and they're going to that. And maybe because there's more creativity there, maybe they don't have to check as many boxes as they do for a movie. I don't know, but it's really unfortunate. There's always been remakes, but today it seems like there's the creativity's gone. I don't know if it's forced or not. Superhero movies. I was talking to Metal Mike Tyler, who is a huge comic book fan. And we were saying how when we were growing up, we would have killed to have this many superhero movies because it was few and far between. Now it's overkill where I don't get excited for a new superhero movie because there's enough out there. There's also TV shows. And I think a lot of these comic book stuff are probably more conducive to series as opposed to doing a movie now, especially with the backstory. There's no need to do a backstory about a comic book hero that you've seen a million times. If you want to do it for a new one, like the first Iron Man, that's fine because nobody had heard of Iron Man. But now there's no reason to do a backstory for Batman. I've only heard good things about the new Batman. Again, it's just the length that's scaring me away.
That's the first I heard it was that long again, but I don't care. The movie was not released for me, so.
Right.
But I'm like you. I have not heard anybody that said they didn't like it. I think they took the comic book feel out of comic book movies. And to a certain point, I kind of get it. They're trying to make it more interesting on a human level. But to me, have you ever – I wonder if you've ever seen that – I think it was an early 90s or late 80s Fantastic Four movie. It was one of the very first Marvel movies ever, Marvel-endorsed. I almost prefer something like that where it's kind of super cheesy.
So bad.
And I'm bad guy, so I'm bad. Well, I'm good guy, so I'm good. You know, where there's no nuance to the that kind of stuff. And to me, that works a little better.
I'm a Jew.
why don't we use this to segue into rock biopics? I was going to ask you kind of to mention some of your favorites. I'll get mine out of the way. There's only one that I'll even endorse is worth watching, and that is The Motley Crue, The Dirt. And not because I'm a Motley Crue fan, and not because it's a great movie, although I've heralded the performance of Machine Gun Kelly, who's a total fucking douchebag and not a person that I have a lot of respect for. Spot on Tommy Lee. He nailed it. He knocked it out of the park way better than Sebastian Stan did in Pam and Tommy. But again, not exactly the hardest role. But you know what? It was believable. He deserves props for that. But I talk about the comic book thing. It dawned on me that, and actually preparing for this afternoon, you know, it was the reason I think I liked that movie versus like something like the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody. And by the way, there's more of those coming, but we'll get into that. Is because this was almost told like a comic book. It was like reading a comic book about the how Motley Crue became a band. And the fact that it was done that way, all the little nuances, the fakes and the non-truths didn't stick out as much. It seemed like from the get-go, it was like, this is complete bullshit. We're just telling this kind of like we're drawing a box, and we're going to kind of shortcut things because there's only so much room to fit in the bubble. And I think that's why I liked it. Now, I've never watched it twice, so I didn't like it that much. But and in general, I think the rock musician genre is the worst thing to do a biopic on. And then I hear things
actually,
like
there haven't been that many, to tell you the truth. About it, there haven't been the many rock ones.
Well,
I think
major ones, but there's been a bunch. Like, I mean, they did a Def Leppard one from VH1 did that was just stupid. But then
you're going to throw on the TV movies.
Well,
definitely been there.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. You get to Straight Outta Compton. You hear all these things about it, and it's great, and it's this. And then finally I watched it, and I'm like, this is exactly as stupid as fucking all these other ones. It's no better. Let's stop, like, you know. But his son played Ice Cube. Son played Ice Cube. I'm like, I don't fucking care.
No.
And again, this is like a scene that I enjoyed. Now it was like. Well, and I was skeptical because I'm skeptical on all these. I was skeptical of The Dirt, and I'm going to be skeptical of everyone that comes after this. There's going to be a Kiss one that's going to suck. It doesn't matter. What about you? Do you have your favorites? You wanted to kind of bring in other ones, I'm guessing, because you didn't think there was enough of the movies.
Well,
made.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of, like, if you want to do, like, real. Not that the Def Leppard one wasn't a real movie. It was like a VH1 movie, but like Hollywood.
I think everybody understands the distinction you're making.
Okay. What I found is the ones I enjoyed the most were not rock ones. The best ones for me, maybe I wasn't as critical about these, but my all-time favorite, and it's not a rock one, is Ray, the Ray Charles story. I'm a huge Ray Charles fan. My dad, you know, that's his all-time favorite artist, so I appreciated going in, but I thought it was really well acted. And the story was really well done, and the music was great, and it was a story I'd never really heard before. So that was tremendous. And when you go to rock, I think of the good ones. Like, I don't know if it's really good, but it definitely put them on the map. The Buddy Holly story with Gary Busey, one of his better performances, and it was one of his early ones too.
Come on,
I don't know how factually true it is, but you know, there I'm sure you've seen La Bamba.
I have. It sucked.
Yeah, there you go. But
I didn't know who Richie Valens was before that. I hadn't heard the song before that. Point. And I was less of a fan after watching La Bamba.
Well, I was hoping you'd take a different spin on that. But that was the good thing, I think, about Buddy Holly. People were forgetting that, you know, Buddy Holly and Richie Valens were even alive at some point. So I thought it proved its point, or did its point, to get at least people interested. And I think that's why Motley Crue did theirs too. As bad as, for me, as cheesy as that film was, you're going to have some young people that are going to go out and listen to the music because of it, whether the movie was good or not. Yeah. I've heard mixed things about this. I go both ways on The Doors with Val Kilmer.
That was horrible.
It's not something. Yeah. When I first saw it as a kid, I was more enthralled because there was a lot going on there. Revisiting it, I don't think it holds up well. You talk to Sonny Pooney. Sonny thinks it's one of the best movies ever, not just biopics. But he just
Sonny's
loves that movie.
A complete idiot. I mean,
he is a contrarian. So he thinks The Godfather is one of the worst movies ever. So
it does insist upon itself, Brian.
Yeah. Did you see Sid and Nancy from the 80s?
Yep, that was horrible.
Yeah, there's another time. So you have all these movies that I'm not sure, you know, they're more bad than I think good. Great Balls of Fire with Jerry Lewis, which Jerry Lewis was my first concert experience because he was promoting Great Balls of Fire at the time. It was, I'm a huge, well.
I'm not saying it was good or bad. I'm like, that's kind of like, you know, you're younger than me. And like that's your first concert? Man.
Well, we've kind of talked about this before. I am an old soul.
Oh, yeah, right.
Music.
Yes, yeah.
So growing up, I listened to straight up blues music and old rock and roll. So it totally was my bang zone. So I was the weird kid while everyone was listening to Whitesnake and Def Leppard and Guns N' Roses, which I liked. I was more in tune with what those bands were probably influenced by.
Is it just a coincidence that you listed three? Wait, no, I'm sorry. Def Leppard is Polygram. Sorry, I was gonna say they're all Geffen record bands, but no, Def Leppard was Polygram, Mercury, or something like that.
I'm thinking 1987. What was really popular?
Yeah, all those. Yeah. So Bon Jovi,
and then Bon Jovi. Yep, and then Rocket Man. I went with a coworker, and she loved Rocket Man, but I didn't realize it was going to be straight up music theater. Like they start singing in the middle of it. And as much as I like Elton John, I could barely get through that movie. So
yeah, I'm not a musical guy at all, man.
Yeah. So that hurt me. The ones I do like. So I told you, Ray, Get On Up, which was Chadwick Boseman playing James Brown.
Okay.
Really well done. If you're a James Brown fan, Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix playing Johnny Cash.
You know what? That one well done. I thought was decent.
Yeah. I think but I was expecting to say you like Walk Hard better to do it.
I probably
story,
do, but. Honestly. Yeah. No, Walk the Line. I remember like all these movies, they tend to like just offend my inner senses when it comes to rock music, being a musician, that kind of stuff. And that one did probably the least of that of the ones that we've mentioned so far that I've seen anyway.
I guarantee you haven't seen this, but it actually is a well done movie. Coal Miner's Daughter was about Loretta Lynn.
And who plays Loretta Lynn?
I believe it's Sissy Spacek.
I've definitely seen it with my mom.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So again, she won an Oscar for that, and it's well done. I don't know how. I think one good thing about biopics today is usually they're a little bit more factual. I think they try to be more factual than back then. So, but who knows? We'll get to this when we talk about do we like biopics or documentaries better. But What's Love Got to Do with It? I thought the acting, you really, if you didn't know about Ike Turner and Tina Turner, I thought that was a real interesting to find out about what a type of guy Ike Turner was and having Lawrence Fishburne playing him. One that people probably haven't seen, Cadillac Records. It's about the story of Chess Records and blues music and Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Etta James. You probably hate it because Beyonce plays Etta James, and we know how you feel about Beyonce. But
is there anything she can't do, Brian? Is there anything she can't do?
Well, she can't play Etta James, obviously, because Etta James actually is great. But and then here's one that's completely off the beaten path, but it's a great movie. Is Amadeus? You know, that came out in the 80s. You know, about Mozart.
So. Yeah, it's probably hard for someone like myself to fact check an Amadeus movie, but in real time. Anyway, I'm saying
in real time.
Like I literally had a notepad out for the Motley Crue, The Dirt, just trying to prep for because we're going to talk about it on the show, and of course I had a note full of things, but then by the end of it, I was like, I don't even care that Kiss poster didn't exist at that time.
Right.
You know, now I'll tell you what really drove my wife batshit was taking me to see the movie Rock of Ages. She is a fan of the play and when the movie came out. And it was nonstop. I'm like, okay, they weren't selling used vinyl like that back then. Slayer did not release that record till a year after. And she's like, it just said the 80s. I'm like, and then I'm like, I looked at her, I'm like, I didn't say July 1987 at the beginning of the movie. I didn't make that decision. They did. So now this fucker's timestamp. They should have at least said, hey, can we pull in Baco as a creative consultant to make sure that we don't – so we avoid these major faux pas. There was just nonstop through that ridiculous movie. Now we talk about silly.
I did the same thing with my coworker, not probably that passionate because she was my coworker, not my wife, but we were talking about Bohemian Rhapsody and I was like, oh, did you see where they had Freddie Mercury with the mustache when he was doing We Will Rock You? Because he wasn't, and that was like 4 years before he even started to grow the mustache. He's looking at me like, are you this stupid? Like, I don't know that. I just kind of like some Queen songs. I thought it was entertaining. And I had to realize, like, yeah, I'm a nerd. Like, I shouldn't care this much.
Well, there is that.
Yeah, I should. And 95% of the people watching this film aren't going to give a shit if Freddie Mercury had a mustache when he was recording We Will Rock You. But that 5%. You know, that is gonna be upset.
So. We're the 5%ers.
We are the 5%ers.
I watched that because my wife wanted to see it, and I did not sit and kind of bitch about it. I'm not the biggest Queen fan to begin with.
Okay,
but I do know. I mean, there was just layer after layer of Hollywood drama, sure, kind of built into that thing that I guarantee didn't exist. What bothered me was kind of almost the Beyonce effect. That what's the name of the guy who played Freddie? The iRobot guy.
Rami Malek.
Look, it was passable. It was fine. But it seems like we live in this day and age, you know, and I talked to you a little bit about my opinions on Black Panther, and I think that kind of falls under the same thing, where it's like, you're not allowed to not like this. This is so fucking good. And to me, he was, like, again, it wasn't like he was bad, but get out of my fucking face with this Oscar talk. It's fake teeth. That's it. And a slight resemblance. Right. Other than that, I truly with my heart believe that Machine Gun Kelly was way more impressive as Tommy Lee. And he didn't look exactly like Tommy, but that's why people go, like, it's all this visual thing. It's like, oh my God, he looks just like Freddie Mercury. That's amazing. No. You can celebrate the fucking effects and makeup department then. That's not him. He didn't fucking do any of that. He just showed up and said, put my teeth in. Okay. Oh, Freddie Mercury. So I know it sounded like you actually liked it better than I did, but I was just like, can we look? And honestly, if people just said, I liked him, but that wasn't the response. It was like, can you believe how fucking good Rami Malek, you know, it's like, come on. And first of all, it's a stupid movie. It's not even that good. It acted like everybody in the world stopped when Queen played fucking the Live Aid show. Yeah. And I was there. We did not. Rant over.
Yeah. I, to kind of go into why part of me loves more. We were going to talk about do we like biopics or documentaries more? The nerd in me likes documentaries more because technically it should be more factual, but that's not true at all. Like, some of these documentaries definitely have an agenda. You look at Sharon and Ozzy, they've spun history since the beginning of Ozzy leaving Black Sabbath. So you're not necessarily getting a true factual, this all happened either. So I guess I don't know. Why do movies bother us more than maybe not factual documentaries? It's a question posed for you.
I think the agenda is a little cleaner. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you know a little bit about who's telling the story, and you can kind of see where they're going, and you can use that information to kind of pick the nuggets of truth out of it. It does have to be done well, and does have to be, you know, told the right way. I mean, how many documentaries has Ozzy made about himself? It's just like, you know, it's just like there's bits and pieces in there that are worth watching, but for the most part, I think they're not that great. But yeah, that helps with me, but you're 100% right. I mean, and sometimes the people making them, in my opinion, don't even realize the narrative they're telling when they're telling it.
Right.
Hired Gun. A lot of people really like that documentary, and it's well done and put together. But to me, it's like, how do you guys not understand that you're not Billy Joel? Like, you know, you didn't join the Beatles where everybody was a member of a band. You were Billy Joel's drummer. You know what I mean? Right. I'm sorry, Eric Singer, but there were two guys before you and you've been in 80 other bands that everybody knows. I mean, you understand that. And then the whole thing is like put together by the guy who was in Five Finger Death Punch, who, by the way, is no longer in Five Finger Death Punch, being happy that he was finally a member of a band. You know, I'm no longer a hired gun. Well, you're back to being that, aren't you? And again, we're talking about hired guns that basically have made a very good career out of it, being kind of butthurt about the idea that nobody cares about the fucking guy who came up with that 5-second drum solo in the John Cougar song. You know what I mean? So, and then the other one is the Twisted Sister one, Twisted Fucking Sister. Again, looks pretty and beautiful. But it's just like, do you guys understand? You just explained why nobody took you seriously in the whole 10-minute rant about people not taking you seriously. It's right. Like you were like, well, why should I go into the city and play for next to nothing and play my own songs when I can make $1,000 out in Long Island playing covers for 3 hours? Yeah, you know what? Cover bands don't get the same fucking respect as people who fucking dive in and say, this is me. And that's why it took you a decade to get a fucking song that people gave a shit about.
Right. I think the Hired Gun one, I think the opposite of one where they aren't upset that they aren't recognized. Did you ever see The Wrecking Crew, which is basically all of the studio musicians?
Amazing. One of my favorites.
On all this. Yeah. They were the polar opposite. They were just like, we're musicians. This is our job. You know, we were on these classic albums, you know, The Birds, The Beach Boys, you know, all of these, Sonny and Cher, all of these, you know, they were around. They never got it. They're just due, but they were okay with it.
Well, some of them did. I mean, what's his name? Yeah. Glenn Campbell came out of that. Carol Kaye is a pretty well-known and respected bass player, so.
Sure. But was she going to be as big as, like, the Monkees? No, but that's okay. Like, she found her, she found her niche.
Nobody's as big as the Monkees.
Just ask Ken Mills. I know. So that's, yeah. But, that's to kind of, I'll kind of transition. I do have a list of documentaries I do like that are music documentaries. And
as do I. Do you want to get into that or do you have more on this?
No, that's all I got with that.
Why don't I just knock mine out? Because I guarantee it's going to be shorter.
Yeah. And let's do it.
give you the little more length there. All right, so some of the ones that I love. There, a lot of these are largely recently. There weren't a lot of ones that I got into. I'm sure if I dug deeper, I'd find one. I do like the Kissology series that Kiss fans complain about, but those really aren't documentaries. Those are just kind of like, here's a shit ton of Kiss shit, you know?
Yeah.
But Sound City that David Grohl put together was fascinating for me as far as just kind of like the history of that studio. And I'm going to kind of segue into that, into his series that he did for HBO, Sonic Highways, where he went to like eight studios and kind of broke down the history there and the current state of it. Those are well done and well put together. And while it does have an agenda, the agenda seems very genuine that like these places matter. We should care about them. It's more in that sense. So. The Eagles 4-hour documentary is to me probably the pinnacle, like because nobody looks good other than maybe Irv Azoff, their manager. Like,
yeah,
I think he is the only guy that comes out of that looking like someone who's clean. So to me, that's what I would like to see from a Kiss documentary. Something that just says, yeah, you're all fucking assholes. And once you got some money, you all became assholes and have because those guys signed off on it. They said, you know what? Fuck it. We're old. It doesn't matter. Yeah. That was a long time ago. The truth is the truth. Rush had a great one. Beyond the Light of Stage, I think it's called. The Foo Fighters I'm touching on the Foo Fighters. I like that one, the back and forth one. The Lemmy one was amazing. And I got two more that I'm going to mention. I have a little more on my list, but only two that I think I'm going to, because in case I'm stepping on something you're going to talk about.
I'm glad you brought the Lemmy one. I totally forgot about Lemmy. And that one's great. You just basically see the guy how nobody sees him as, you know, just him in his apartment. That was worth it just to see his apartment.
Nazi stuff. And I think Anvil, the movie on the album, was important because it literally, all of a sudden the world said, you know what? I don't need to know who the fuck you are to find your story interesting. And there was a glut, and it's still happening. And I think that's a good thing for the most part. Now, there's kind of an oddball one. I'm curious if you've heard about it. Jandek on Corwood. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
Now, there was a Spin magazine article about this DVD that got me to get into it. Jandek is a guy who lives in Texas, and he self-released records, and he would sell them out of, like, magazine ads. And you would just send it to the check you wrote out to was written to Jandek on Corwood. And he wrote music that I can at best call, like, you know, imagine if Bob Dylan didn't know how to play guitar or even tune one, but recorded as prolifically and was also even worse of a singer and worse of a songwriter. And it's this guy, and he just has got like 30 fucking albums out there. And like there's like these theories that he's secretly like, you know, some this guy or that guy. So this whole documentary builds up to a phone call with the guy. And then but it's just I'm not even sure if I fucking believe it. You know what I mean? It was almost like listening to that Wind of Change podcast about the scorpions, you know, stopping the Cold War, where there's parts where you're hooked in like, this is true, and then like, no, this is not. But it's a fascinating movie, and if you haven't seen it, I think you would enjoy it, especially because it's super dorky and nerdy. And it's about hunting down and finding this guy, and eventually all you get is this audio phone interview. But fantastic. What do you got?
I have a little bit more than that, probably not more. the Bee Gees documentary that I think was on HBO. I don't know if you're a Bee Gees fan or. Yeah, okay. It's more sad now because really. Barry is the only one that's alive now. So him being there, totally honest about the relationship and not everyone comes off well. So that I think if they're being honest, I think that's, they hit the mark on that. I just saw one 2 weeks ago. It's been out since 2011, but I don't know if you're a fan of Bill Withers, but it's called Just Bill. And this guy was awesome. He started his music career at 32 and then he hit it big. I mean, he was making toilets and then he was writing songs and everything. Before you know it, he releases Ain't No Sunshine and he's this huge superstar. And then pretty much he decided, and after about 10 albums and he went through the 70s, I'm done. And he's never recorded again. So I think he did one album in 85 and that's it. And so
he's still alive.
He died a couple years ago, but at this point, I think he was 75 or something like that.
Okay.
And it really gets into his life. And he was a stutterer and he learned how to get over that. And he doesn't stutter when he sings, but it shows him going to this school for kids who are trying to overcome stuttering. And it's really powerful. And just to see a different side of a guy that really was one of the top music artists in the 70s. And he doesn't let it go to his head at all. So that's kind of refreshing. Did you ever see the Tom Petty documentary by Peter Bogdanovich?
That was another great one. That's another 4-hour one, right?
Yeah, but that one flies. I mean, Batman, no. Tom Petty, yes.
There was one part that I just, it got me going, oh, come on. It's like when they're trying to find that new drummer. And then like, we just couldn't find the right guy, man. They're and like for a second, Dave Grohl's in the mix, and they play on Saturday Night Live, and he's just being Dave Grohl about it, like totally not fitting. And then they offer him the job, but he's just like, you need that right vibe. And then they show the guy playing, and they're like playing like I Won't Back Down, and it's just like the most mundane. You know, think he just had, you know, it's like, just shut the fuck up. You just found a goddamn drummer. I mean, honestly, it just drove me nuts. It's not Dave Lombardo. You don't need that. You know what I mean? It's like, you didn't even get Ringo Starr. You got Drum Machine. Anyway, yeah, but other than that, I loved it.
There is that great quote about Stevie Nicks always wanted to be part of the Heartbreakers, and he's just basically in his southern drawl. It's like, yeah, but we don't got any girls in the band. Just leaves it like that. It's like, sorry, Stevie, you know, forget Fleetwood Mac and whatnot.
I never really appreciated how big he was. You know what I mean? You know, across the board, and how it wasn't just people who were fans of his. It was like, you know, people like, you know, like the other guys in the Traveling Wilburys who were fans of his music, and they're people from a different era. You know what I mean? And plus, like the fact that in 1990, all of a sudden he's appealing to 17-year-olds.
Yeah. So, did you ever see Chuck Berry's Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, which was directed by Taylor Hackford, who did Ray?
I definitely did. I don't remember a lot of it. I remember when he's like scolding Keith Richards.
Yes. And that's awesome because Chuck Berry, like, this is warts and all. Not a great dude.
He's a horrible human being.
He's kind of like Ike Turner. Amazing musician, amazing songwriter, but not a good dude. Yeah, not a good dude, but... to see a legend like Keith Richards basically being like treated like this little kid. Yeah. And you see like Eric Clapton and him like jam. They're like, no, you're playing it wrong, Chuck. And Chuck's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm Chuck Berry.
We've since learned that Eric Clapton's not exactly Eric Clapton's guy.
Exactly. They kind of all deserve each other. And the one that comes out the cleanest is Keith Richards. He's actually a pretty good guy compared to all them. So, you're not a big Aerosmith fan, but the making of Pump, the album Pump, in 1989, it's just them filming it's kind of like some kind of monster, except Pump's a much better album than Saint Anger. But you get to see Steven Tyler. Debatable. You get to see Steven Tyler and Joe Perry like really writing these songs from their infancy stage to what it would turn into. So for me as an Aerosmith fan, that was great, and to see that.
I will say this: a good documentary. Yeah. I'll enjoy almost any story if it's compelling. It doesn't have to be a band I like a lot. A lot of times, I'll appreciate a band more when I see something like that.
Well, then you might like the Bee Gees one then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The Bee Gees one, I think when the next season of Succession comes around and we resubscribe to HBO Max, I'm going to watch the Bee Gees one because...
there you go.
Because they had a Behind the Music back in the day when those were happening, and I love that.
And I never really got into the early stuff, like the 60s stuff. And I appreciate that stuff more now because most people only know Saturday Night Fever, and so that was interesting. ZZ Top, that little old band from Texas, I think that's a Sam Dunn.
Did not like that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That to me, there was some good stuff in there, and it's beautifully shot. The live, the stuff of them playing in that, I think it's one of the oldest Texas roadhouses.
Yeah.
And then they're releasing a record of all the stuff they played that day. I think on Record Store Day. I just was like, you get to the part where it starts to get interesting, and then you guys just kind of skip ahead. To me, I just, some of the stuff was cool. I just thought underwhelmed anyway.
I think that's a Sam Dunn problem. He did the same thing as Super Duper Alice Cooper.
I haven't seen that yet. Now, Joey Haney loves it. Everybody else I've talked to says, eh.
Because right when they get to 1986, it ends pretty much. Like, they don't really, and then they skip forward, I guess, to what he's doing now. But
he
it's
didn't
pretty
do
much
the Twisted Sister one, did he? Because that one stopped just before Stay Hungry.
And it was long too. It's like 2.5 hours. It's like, really? You're talking about milking a dead horse, but kicking a dead horse. Tina Turner, it's just called Tina. I mean, I kind of referenced the biopic, but this for me is more comprehensive. You really learn more about Ike Taylor. She really is an amazing person about what she did. I don't think she gets enough credit with her voice and her comeback, because most people don't have like a 20-year career and then have it pretty much rechanged their whole studio and persona and everything, and she did. So
can I sidetrack off of that a little bit?
Of course.
I don't think you can anymore. You're not allowed to. Think of all the like artists in the 80s that were actually kind of like getting a resurgence from their career in the 70s, like Elton John, Eric Clapton, Phil Collins, Genesis. These were fucking heart, fucking Bruce Springsteen, was one of the biggest artists of the 80s. We wouldn't do that now. We just don't.
I think the last guy to do it, and it's still 20 years ago, Santana. I think Santana was the last to really do it.
Yeah. All right. Keep going. I'm going to think about that.
Paul Butterfield. Yeah. I'm sure you never heard of him.
Yeah.
Amazing harmonica player. Played with Muddy Waters, had his own band. It's called Horn from the Heart. So if you just want to see some old school like footage of him playing with like Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf before his band took off, and it does get a little tropey with doing too many drugs and alcohol, but just seeing how underappreciated he was at the time, it's a good documentary. And then the last one, this might appeal to you because you are kind of an old school punk guy, but the original Decline of Western Civilization.
Oh, I own it.
Yeah, the first one. I think is the second one's fun.
Yeah.
The first one's the best because it really is that raw scene of, that Penelope Spears got,
What about just a quick one? The singer from Pentagram. I can't remember what it's called, but Bobby Liebling is the singer. But that one was fucked. That is dark as fuck, man.
Oh, I loved it. It's called Last Days Here.
There we go.
Yeah. And I really never heard of Pentagram, but I don't know it came up on my radar, and I was like, this dude's fucked. Like, he can't they're giving him so many opportunities, he keeps screwing up, and
he's an addict, what I mean? It's just
he is. But it was more sad than I wasn't upset. I was just like, dude, like, just you obviously have some talent, you're just pissing it away,
Yeah. Well, and then and speaking of people who are, you know, got some fucking issues to deal with, Kanye's got a new one on Netflix. I started watching that. I'll probably eventually finish it, but my wife refuses to because
she's smart, you know. Love this movie, and I don't know why. I get why they like the soundtrack, but I think it's a shit movie. It's Purple Rain. Like, I don't get the love of this movie. I think it's a terrible movie.
Have you seen the scene of Apollonia down by the lake that is not Lake Minnetonka?
I'll just watch porn. Well, Purple Rain tits. You know, that's what I'll.
We're
that's
back
what
to
I like.
Porn. Everything goes back to porn.
Exactly.
No, are you kidding me? You are spot on. Although I do think people like this movie in kind of a good hurt kind of way. I don't know that it's.
Sure.
I remember at the time it was like, wow, Prince. I mean, yeah. I was fucking pumped to sneak in to see that one. And I didn't even know about Apollonia's tits.
That's right.
And boy, it was worth the price.
It was worth that.
Yeah. I think it was $2 to pay for the ticket to the movie that wasn't R-rated and then to pretend to play a video game and sneak in. But that's you're right. That's a horrible, horrible movie.
Well, it is the equivalent of The Jazz Singer. Now, I'm being hypocritical here. I appreciate The Jazz Singer because I love Neil Diamond. I think it's the same reason why people love Purple Rain, because they love Prince. But you watch Under the Cherry Moon and like, woof, like you could see where Prince will only carry you so far, you know, with being Prince. So yeah, that's all I got for those.
All right. Well, we're running pretty long here, so I did want to talk soundtracks a little bit, but let's do this kind of more of in a quick hitter way. I'll tell you the ones I wrote down that are strong for me. The spoiler here is that like there aren't that many soundtracks that I think are that great. But I do love the heavy metal soundtrack, the original cartoon animated thing. And speaking of porn, that I remember watching that for the first time when my dad splurged and got HBO for a year. He must have got a bonus at work or something.
He said splurge.
I remember thinking like 16 or 17 years old going, is it appropriate or not appropriate to jerk off to cartoon tits? By the way, I'm still not sure, Brian. almost 40 years later, I'm not sure. You have an answer.
Welcome to hentai.
What's that?
Yeah, welcome to hentai, the Japanese animated porn or whatever it is.
Man, I can tell you though, it made me horny and I didn't feel good about it.
Fritz the Cat, I'm sure you've seen.
No. Lost Boys soundtrack is amazing. That to me is one of my favorite ones. And it's not a lot of hard rock on that, but it just not only that, but the songs are actually in the fucking movie. And it's actually kind of a good flow to an overall soundtrack. I think the weak spot there is Echo and the Bunnymen, People Are Strange. And even that, not that bad.
So if I recall correctly, it's pretty much newer bands doing covers. I think Less Than Zero did the same thing. That's why Slayer did Ina Gata Da Vida and
Correct. Like that. That's a horrible soundtrack. The Poison Rock and Roll All Night made it the worst soundtrack of all time.
One of them, yes. Soundtracks really took off, and this isn't my all-time favorite soundtrack, but as we're talking, we also talked about this band. Saturday Night Fever really brought in the era of modern soundtracks.
Right on.
Before that, it was either musicals, Disney, or score. And so you might have The Graduate thrown in there with Simon and Garfunkel, maybe In the Heat of the Night with Ray Charles, but for the most part, soundtracks, you didn't have original music until Saturday Night Fever, and it ushered in the whole era of, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. And today, soundtracks are kind of dead. It's a playlist. As much as I like Guardians of the Galaxy as a movie and the songs, it's a playlist. Like, it's not brand new music. So I missed that you would get a whole new soundtrack of songs specifically for a movie. That era is over, and it's been over for about 20 years.
How about this? When this is another tangent. Fuck. When was the last time a movie was spawned from a new musical movement? I got to think like singles or that whole, because it seems to me now when they make movies, it's going back to the 80s. If they're touching on, if they're inspired by a movement, because that the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack was disco blew up. And then, God, there was
Flashdance.
Well, Trick or Treat. For heavy metal, by the way, that's next on my list. I love that soundtrack, but it's basically Fastway doing a new album, but it's great music. And then you had like singles, in the 90s, but that had to be kind of one of the last ones, right?
I think so. And, I mean, I think Flashdance, Footloose,
definitely count. Well, Footloose is the Flashdance definitely does.
Yeah.
Footloose seems more like, no, it's a collection of songs that are brand new, like you were talking about. But it's really about it was already pop music already existed. So, I mean.
The theory behind the story was that they couldn't dance in this small town.
Sure. What I'm saying is that like disco, metal.
Sure.
Grunge,
no, I get that.
So anyway.
That's totally fair.
My last one is Shocker. Shocker.
Yeah.
A horrible movie. And a Wes Craven movie, if I believe right. But
it was.
That's a great soundtrack. It's so many basically obscure and big name metal bands of that era. Megadeth, Kiss, Bonfire, that kind of stuff. So Guy Man
Did
Dude.
You like?
Great name, by the way, Guy Man Dude.
Yeah.
Co-wrote a handful of Kiss songs and then has his own song on there. So Desmond Child, I think, makes his first singing appearance on this. But
that's true.
Desmond Child and Rouge, I think, was like in the early 80s, like around
70s.
Yeah, something like that. When he started working with Paul Stanley. But like once his like name became big, this was like the first thing that was just him.
Right. Did you like No More Mr. Nice Guy, the Megadeth cover?
Probably at the time a little bit, but for the most part, no. My feelings towards covers over the years has just been this glut of like, the more and more I hear bands do covers, the less and less I want to hear the bands do covers. That doesn't mean there aren't still examples of good ones, but I'm always unimpressed when a artist does something like a Megadeth does, an artist as big as Alice Cooper, and they pick one of the most obvious songs. To me, that
obvious
says,
song, yeah.
You don't like Alice Cooper that much.
Right.
It's like, this is really lazy. Because if you said, you can record one Kiss song, Jason, it's not going to be Rock and Roll All Night or anything you probably heard them play live. So
Exactly. And if you watch that music video for No More Mr. Nice Guy, it's great because Dave is so out of it.
Penelope's heroin or something like that.
He was nodding off and everything. So just for that. So my top three, and I have other ones I'll quickly get to, but the top three, the Blues Brothers. My second favorite movie of all time, and just like a soundtrack
great
I listen
movie.
To constantly. Great movie. It talk about introducing younger folks into these amazing soul artists and blues artists from the past, whether it be Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, James Brown, Cab Calloway. I mean, amazing. I can't speak enough of that soundtrack and obviously that film. This one's kind of a cheat, but it's kind of like the franchise as a whole, Rocky. You watch the first Rocky movie, as good as it is. I mean, Rocky, I mean, people are going to laugh, but it changed filmmaking forever. Every underdog story pretty much owes a debt of gratitude to Rocky, post-Rocky, whether it be the story arc, whether it be the use of montages. I mean, '80s basically built a whole genre of a movie.
Sylvester Stallone wouldn't have a career without a montage.
Absolutely. I mean, look at Rocky IV. It's an entire movie of montages. Mm. So, but yeah, I mean, you watch the original Rocky and just the score and Bill Conti and that whole movie is better because of the music. And then once you get to Rocky III, when you have Eye of the Tiger, and I don't know if you know the story, but originally they wanted to get Another One Bites the Dust. Queen wouldn't allow him to do that. And so that's when he went to Survivor and got Eye of the Tiger. And Eye of the Tiger is way better for Rocky than Another One Bites the Dust. Once you hear the drums and they sound like punches and whatnot. So love Rocky soundtracks. And then now I was talking about how there's no great soundtracks. I don't know how you feel about this artist, but the most recent A Star Is Born from 2018, that was one of my favorite. It might be one of my favorite soundtracks because it's all original music. It covers that wide gamut of rock, classic rock, country, and just modern pop, but not bad modern pop. I listen to this constantly to this day, and I miss original music and movies and the fact that they did it. And I really do like the movie too. I think it's really well done. I don't know if you've seen the movie or heard the soundtrack.
I haven't.
But I don't know how you feel about Lady Gaga. So,
she's super talented. If there's anything that annoys me about her, it's more the fact that hard rock and metal guys seem to want to like justify like, oh, she's a true. She's not. I'm sorry. She's not a fucking metalhead.
No.
The only critical thing I can say is the only thing I've heard on that record is Shallow, and I think that is a shit garbage song. How you even call that a chorus to me? It's like shallalalalalalalo, and you know I can AB me in the song. It really isn't that far off. Shallalalalalalalo. Much respect for her as a singer, not as an actress so much, but. I didn't see her in that movie, to be fair. But she was on American Horror Story. Oh God, she was just in something else recently, and I found her very
House of God or House of Gucci.
There it is. Yes, and she was like the least like. It's like, could you like do that accent worse? I mean, it's like listening to Belky, but as a singer, and also
Belky,
you know,
Belky was great in Beverly Hills Cop, by the way.
Yeah, he was his most believable role. As a songwriter and a singer, the pop hooks that she comes up with too. Because it's not my real thing, sure, that I get gravitated, yeah, to, I can only speak on typically the hits, but like Born This Way to me is a banger, and fun to listen to. So I don't disrespect her in her talent. I may not care for her and stuff like that, but Shallow sucks.
And that's fair. I don't mind it. But I was impressed with Bradley Cooper actually sings on it, and he's not bad.
Is that the only song he sings on in the soundtrack then?
No, there's about three or four songs he sings on.
Okay.
And some of them are straight up like classic hard rock. So
I used to have a man crush on Bradley Cooper.
There you go. So you might be looking with, rose colored glasses when watching him. Some other quick ones. And this is just from my childhood, American Graffiti. I love the movie. I love the soundtrack. It's all these great 50s and 60s songs mixed with Wolfman Jack, basically doing like almost a radio show over it. So that's great.
Wolfman. Yeah.
So good. Eddie and the Cruisers, terrible movie.
What about Eddie and the Cruisers too? I actually, that's a movie I would watch that before the first one. And it's so stupid. It is so dumb. Eddie's hiding in Canada as a construction worker.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You got to bring him back somehow. But the first movie, the first soundtrack, I really enjoyed the soundtrack.
I just bought that on vinyl recently.
There you go. There you go. Because it's weird. It's like this.
It's my favorite Bruce Springsteen record.
And then, okay, so to do it to Howard Rock, terrible movie again. But Last Action Hero, I do watch.
Oh, I forgot that one. That is a killer fucking soundtrack. Actually, Judgment Night is a great fucking soundtrack too, man.
It is.
Where they do mashed up metal and rap. Man.
Yep.
Nice. That was a good pull.
Those two Alice in Chains songs are great. They're great.
That should have been on my list. Sorry, people.
No, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. You're the movie guy.
And even though they might not be your cup of tea, I grew up with the Flashdance and Footloose soundtracks, and those always used to be in our
I car. Love the movie Footloose. And that, by the way, have you seen that recently? It does not hold up at all.
Just did an episode where there was crossover with Grown Up Rock, so we talk all about
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's based on a true story that really happened in this small town and
yeah.
wherever it was, where there was a law on the books that you couldn't have dances and do things like that. So, by the way, some props to you. I love the clips you were playing for your the independent film you made. They were making me definitely smile.
Film.
Yes.
You know, that has never been so misappropriately grandiose. That phrase.
I can be your hype man.
Yeah, right on. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, I would think we'd be generous to call them shorts, but yes. Well, let me just plug those real quick. Go on YouTube.
Yeah.
Check out the Jesus Chrysler YouTube channel and look up. There's three of them that we did that are loosely tied together. It starts with Bret Michaels' Ghost Zombie. Then the sequel to that is Cherry Pie Guy. And then it ends with The Exervention. So it's about, I think, 15 minutes of total viewing. Well, Brian, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming on. It turned out I was worried that I didn't have enough to talk about, but apparently that worry
we had too
was,
much.
We didn't even get to everything. We didn't talk any baseball.
No,
because I know you're a baseball fan, and I just like touching on people's passions. But you definitely brought the movie magic, so I appreciate that. Brian, of course, hosts, like we said at the beginning, the damn good the damn good movie memories podcast. I always want to throw
goddamn movie memories,
the goddamn magic movie memories podcast. Yes. No, definitely check
which
it out.
Which is going to be the porn podcast, by the way.
Oh man, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Thank you. I appreciate this. This has been awesome. And we have too long of distance between, you know, talking. So this is, we get to catch up, and this is awesome.
No, it's been great. Quick plug of your show here.
Yeah. So Damn Good Movie Memories, the podcast, been around since 2016. And as much as Baco thinks it's PG-13, and there are some episodes that we have Ian Wadley on, so we know that's definitely not PG-13. Yeah. So that is definitely a fun episode. But yeah, so basically, I think the best way to put it is if you enjoy a certain movie that I cover, you're going to enjoy it even more, because I'm going to probably tell you stuff about the movie you never heard. Or if you've never heard about or seen the movie that I'm talking about for that particular episode, you may gain some sort of appreciation and go out and watch it. And as we were saying, there's not a lot of great movies that are being released today. There's 100 years worth of movies out there. So why not discover a movie you've never seen before? So that's what we try to do. And if you'll let me plug, I also have a radio show, which is music, and it's called The Bad Beat. And it takes place on thatmetalstation.com every Wednesday night at 11 p.m. Eastern time. And it's basically bluesy hard rock that we play.
And 100% on everything you said about your show. Love it.
Thank you.
All right, Brian, this has been a lot of fun, but we got to wrap this up. Time to get out of here. What do you say?
All right. Thank you, Baco.
Absolutely. Movies are not dead.
But clever porn titles definitely are. We should do it. I think from this podcast, I know you really wanted to pitch me the porn thing, but I think we should do a Human Nature, like just find out good parenting, bad parenting, where it really leads to. I know it's
Human
it's
Nature always leads to porn, though.
It will. Yeah. So eventually all these people end up in porn stars anyway. So you might get your wish.
Well, no, everybody, look, every human nature, whether you become a porn star or just enjoy the work, it always, everybody is on a path to porn. Basically, from the day they're born, you know, it's like, I don't know if you heard, I'm a grandfather. My grandson is a certain number of days away from watching porn for the first time.
It's true.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.